Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to share the power of mushrooms. From the University of Malaya in Malaysia, there's new research showing that eating mushrooms can delay or prevent dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Also, from Yuan University in China, the mushroom, this fungus, can delay and prevent depression. These are important research studies, by the way. Then we're going to look at how recommending organic agriculture for human health is a must. This is from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. And also, we're going to explore why you should never store potatoes in the garage or cellar or the fridge or at low temperatures. And that's from Prevent Disease. And then we're going to look at the brain and how there's new stimulation of the brain, but it's not what you've been led to believe on the internet. On the internet, there's a famous British 1980s rocker who's getting a supposedly the shock therapy. No, that causes grand mal seizures. It traumatizes the brain. It causes swelling in the brain. That's not the right approach. However, electromagnetics can stimulate the brain and improve memory. Northwestern University Medical School will share the latest on that and how aging changes the fat in our cells, University of Buffalo, plus more on these topics. Then we're going to give you the latest commentaries. I want to take you inside the banking system. Weren't we promised that we would never allow these banks to become so big again that they could fail and we would have to bail them out? Well, they've gotten much bigger. In fact, the six largest banks are so big that they're holding $278 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars of exposure to derivatives. If you don't know what a derivative is, I'll explain. If you don't know why that's dangerous to every American, I'll go into detail. Also from Professor Henry Drew, normalizing Trump's authoritarianism is not an option. And from Chris Hedges, when fear comes. And also, I'm going to address Rachel Maddow and others who share her political and ideological perspective, which is certainly their right. They're very articulated in their presentations. But I'm going to show a completely different perspective. I started yesterday. I gave you the exact amounts that major pharmaceutical companies had to give the government because they were found guilty of all forms of crimes. Now, how many crimes did they commit? How many lawsuits have they settled? Over 300,000. I hired lawyers for a year in my office to collect this data. I knew sooner or later this would be very important, and why? Because I wanted to show that when you're on television and you're supposedly doing objective reporting, and on some issues you certainly may be doing objective reporting, who's paying your salary? Those ads. What are the basis of those ads? Making promises of safety and efficacy, whether it's for a flu vaccine or for a better night's sleep or way of dealing with allergies. Well, how do you know that they're true? You don't. How do you know that the government is really engaged in research to make sure that these people are telling the truth? They aren't. Well, then who can you trust? You can't, unless they're independent outside scientists, which there are, and independent outside consumer activists, which there are few, and outside journalists, but not the mainstream. You never see them going after these commercials and the veracity of their claims. So how then can you, any of you on Fox, MSNBC, NBC, CNN. How can you challenge those who are saying the vaccine led to damages in their child, or that genetically engineered material is safe? You have a scientist on who says that. How do you know? And for those of us who've done our homework, who are actually not just activists, but in areas that you have no knowledge, we're actually scholars. Yet you would dismiss all of our scholarship, all of our studies, all of our insights, and say that it's quackery or pseudoscience, or trust Wikipedia, which shouldn't be trusted for anything. And you would take the word of a publicist or a shill for the pharmaceutical industry or one of the other major industries. So I'm going to highlight that today by taking on a different industry. And today I'm taking on the banks, specifically scholarship, the exact amount that a certain bank paid, what's the date, what were they found guilty of, because we have to ask ourselves, if these banks are supporting the different presidential candidates throughout history, if these are the banks who, from their membership, our Council on Economic Advisors is selected, the Secretary of the Treasury is selected, the head of the Federal Reserve is selected, and they're known for serial corruption, then why should we ever trust anything they say, since they have a history of always lying, deceiving, and breaking the law? But they're never found guilty because the Justice Department has been selected, who runs it, coming from the white shoe companies that are paid by those same Wall Street firms or the same pharmaceutical firms. As a result, not a single person from the pharmaceutical industry was found guilty of personally participating in crimes against humanity, which they did, went to jail, or lost their job, which they didn't. I want to show you how corrupt the entire system is, and therefore you can trust no one at all, either in the alternative media, which is equally corrupt or stupid or vile, as the mainstream media is as well. What I'm saying is you better really be prepared to do your homework. And I hold myself to the same standards. Trust nothing I say. Challenge me to verify it, prove it, and I will. And I let you know, I do this before I go on the air. Lawyers on my staff review everything. Scholars and residents review everything because I'm a target. I'm the one who has the largest health program in the world, the number one progressive radio show in the world, the number one progressive radio station in the world. So they all have me in their sights. So I have to be extremely diligent in objectivity, in fairness, and most importantly, in accuracy. But hold everyone else to the same standards and see how little actually filters through. Let's begin, because we got a powerful show today. And if you think today's show is going to be powerful after you hear it, wait till you hear who's coming on tomorrow and what I'm going to discuss with that person. In fact, I had heard this person made a statement. I found them in Belize. No easy task to find out where they were and then to reach them in Belize. That doesn't have good phone service, but we'll have our interview tomorrow on Skype. And I simply said, I heard that you said this. Did you say this? Yes or no? Yes. Can you prove it? Yes. Give me the proof. The person presented the proof. I said, okay, I'm going to have her on the show on Thursday. Make a note to let everyone you know listen to tomorrow's program. I can assure you it will be unsettling to everyone listening all over the world. But you got to hear what this man has to say. And I trust his judgment. So I will say no more than that. Tomorrow at noon, you will hear this absolutely what no one in the media will allow to be said. But we do, because we're not afraid of the truth. Let's begin. From the University of Malaya in Malaysia comes an article published in the Journal of Medicinal Foods, which is a very important journal because it shows you which foods actually have medicinal properties. So if There's science showing that if you eat a banana, you're going to get potassium, and potassium is good for your heart and the balance between sodium in the body, which we have too much of from our diet, and potassium, which we have too little of, and that can adversely affect the rhythm of your heart and the thickness of your blood. When you have too much sodium, your blood tends to be thicker, which is not good, and you're more likely to have a stroke. So it's very important we know which foods are medicinal. Well, there are certain edible medicinal mushrooms that contain bioactive compounds that may enhance nerve growth in your brain. Wow, is that ever important, especially for anyone suffering from memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS? All of those conditions would be benefited from these particular nerve growth enhancers, especially multiple sclerosis. And it protects against the neurotoxic stimuli, which, let's say, inflammation is a neurotoxic stimuli. Aluminum is a neurotoxic stimuli. Mercury is the same. Lead's the same. Cadmium's the same. Artificial sweeteners are the same. Pesticides are the same. Because all that leads in time to neurodegenerative diseases, such as dementia and Alzheimer's. So the evidence supporting a potential role of mushrooms as a functional food to reduce or delay development of age-related neurodegenerative diseases is very, very important. Now, by the way, there's thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature of how good shiitake, maitake, reishi mushrooms are, and other mushrooms as well, for our immune system in particular. But this is the first time I've seen where it actually is beneficial to the brain and the central nervous system. Quote from the study: in contrast to the body of literature on food ingredients that may benefit cardiometabolic diseases and cancer, very few studies have focused on food that may benefit neurodegenerative diseases. And then it goes on to say the current study might stimulate the identification of more food materials that are neuroprotective. Indeed, it already exists. Some additional neuroprotective foods would be blueberries, pomegranate, blackberries, tart cherries, kale, spirulina, chlorella, and wheatgrass. Those are also good. So get your mushrooms. Now, there's another reason to eat mushrooms, completely different. This is from published in Pharmaceutical Biology, research done at UN, that's U or Y-U-A, excuse me, Y-U-N-N-A-N, Yunnan University in China. They found bioactive compounds contained within an edible mushroom may delay or prevent the onset of conditions like depression. Why? Well, it's well documented that the polysaccharides found in mushrooms are effective antioxidants, anti-inflammatory, immunomodulating, and antimicrobial agents. And that's why, for example, yesterday when I was counseling a person with pneumonia, and by the way, in the near future, I will produce a little homemade documentary on working with refugees in a Syrian refugee camp to show you the plight of their lives, how they live each day, and I'm having someone film, again, it's not my normal professional documentary style, but just show you what happens when they come into a tent, sit down, and they're being counseled and how to help them when it seems like there's nothing that can help them. But there is, and you'll have a chance to see that. Anyhow, mushrooms are high up on that list. And it's always best to lightly saute a mushroom. It's actually far more biologically active when they have had heat added because the heat breakdowns the cell and allows a greater conversion of the polysaccharides. Hence, I do not recommend raw mushrooms. But it's a very big anti-inflammatory, especially if you have pneumonia, a cold, or influenza. And now they're saying in a separate study that it is very good when studying and using the mushrooms on depression. And this was a randomized study, and it made a big difference in those suffering from depression. And again, we're talking about the same basic mushroom groupings. And then researchers at Karolinska Institute in Sweden found, when they reviewed the existing scientific literature throughout the world, and this was done for the European Parliament, a group of European researchers has identified the benefits of organic food production for human health. In fact, the researchers recommended the Parliament to consider giving priority to certain organic production practices and their use also in agriculture. And this recommendation comes from a year study resulting in the report entitled Human Health Implications of Organic Food and Organic Agriculture. And there's a lot of benefits. The amount of nutrients, much higher. The quality of the soil when it's grown organically, much richer. It has earthworms and other microorganisms that help to leave phosphorus trails when an earthworm crawls through the soil and aerates the soil. There's cover crops. So in the wintertime, instead of the land being barren and then frozen, then thawing, then cracking, and then water washing it away, the topsoil, when you have a cover crop, let's say like soy, and then in the springtime you till that under, and the tilled under has held the nutrients in place during the winter and spring, and now it becomes green fertilizer. It gives nitrogen back to the soil, making the next season's crops even richer. And it's something the average person could do. So they're saying that, quote, several practices in organic agriculture, in particular the low use of pesticides and antibiotics, offer benefits for human health. So they're saying go organic. Then we have why you should not store potatoes in a garage, a cellar, refrigerator, or at low temperatures. Why? Well, according to Prevent Disease, we put often vegetables in the fridge to help prevent spoiling and keep them fresh. But, and here's the big caveat, keeping potatoes at a chilly temperature will not only negatively affect their taste, but it makes the starch turn into sugar faster and leaving you with a tougher potato. Why? Because garages and storage cellars and the fridge and other places which drop to low temperatures places some of the potatoes in harm once they are cooked at a later date. At low temperatures, an enzyme called invertase breaks down the sugar sucrose in potatoes to glucose and fructose, which can form acrylamide during cooking. So frozen food doesn't carry this particular risk, as sucrose doesn't get broken down at very low temperatures. And the Food Standards Agency explains that when baked or fried, these sugars combine with the amino acid aspergillin present in the potatoes and produce the chemical acrylamides. Now, you've heard me mention many times that acrylamides, which is the browning of carbohydrates, is dangerous. Now, if you once in a while had something that was browned, lightly browned, not heavily browned, it's not going to make a big difference. But we don't do that once in a while thing. We do it every day, where people have their toast every day or bagel every day, french fries every day, and that's when it becomes dangerous because those are acrylamides. And acrylamide is made by something called the Maillard, that's Maillard reaction, which browns cooked foods and gives them their pleasant flavor. But as sugars and amino acids react together, they produce thousands of different chemicals. And particularly high levels of acrylamide are found in starchy foods, like breads, especially the crust of breads. And when cooked at temperatures above 120 degrees, the chemical can also be present in breakfast cereals and biscuits, things like that. And it is a known genotoxic carcinogen. It's increasing your risk of cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. It's really dangerous. I first mentioned on this radio program the dangers of overcooked foods, brown foods, back in 2000, and now it's something that's accepted. So all the more reason to make sure that you're getting your foods that are, you can dry a food, you can actually make a food taste like regular you can have use of steam. You can use dehydrators at under 120 degrees. So you get the same mouthfeel and effect, but I've even shown people how to make pizza crusts out of gluten-free flour in a dehydrator, and then had them taste that it was vegan and dairy gluten-free, and they could not differentiate it from one that was purchased outside, brought in two side-by-side, vegan cheeses, and they didn't know the difference. So it's important. By the way, just one study from the scientific literature from Maastricht University in the Netherlands analyzed data from 62,573 women who entered a study and found that the higher intakes of acrylamide were associated with higher risks of certain types of cancer, mainly breast cancer. And it was a 13-year study. So they had a 43% higher incidence. Quote, "We definitely believe acrylamide is a chemical to be concerned about." I would agree with that. And finally, the brain, if it's stimulated by low pulse electromagnetics, it can improve your memory. Now, Northwestern University Medical School did a study, and the scientists showed for the first time that non-invasive brain stimulation could be used in a way that improves memory. And precise memory, rather than general memory, is critical for knowing details such as specific colors and shapes and locations of a building you're looking for, rather than simply knowing the part of town it's in. And it's not the first time this was done. Let me take you back to the Tri-State Healing Center on 72nd and Broadway. And for 10 years, every single day in one room, we had electromagnetic stimulation. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. One of the problems of this current administration and the Bush administration is their support for Israel. Now, Israel deserves, and the Jews of Israel deserve to live in peace and harmony with their neighbors. And many want that. There's a vibrant peace movement in Israel, but they're not in power. Those in power want the settlements, they want to usurp whatever the Palestinian land is, and they have the wherewithal at this time to do it, and they don't really care what the world community thinks. But also, with President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton, Israel was brought in on a partnership with the National Security Agency and the CIA. Now, think of this for a moment. They went into Iran that has invaded no one in over 240 years. And they decided, even though this was a sovereign country, and we, the United States, have been responsible for going into their country, Dwight Eisenhower, working with the British, to protect the interests of British Petroleum, we took out a peace-loving intellectual who had become the leader of the country in a democratic election, Moshedek. We first had to attack him. We had to attack his integrity, his character. And finally, there was a coup. Moshedek was removed, and in comes the Shah of Iran. The Shah of Iran was a murderer. He had the Savat, the secret police. They detained, tortured, and killed tens of thousands of people. And that went on for a quarter century. He looted the country of its wealth. There was great economic disparity. There was no freedom of the press, assembly, nothing. So then when there was an uprising and he was thrown out, we then backed and supported our man in Iraq, Saddam Hussein. We supplied him with weapons. We supplied him with intelligence, satellite. And he then had an 8-year war with Iran where over 1 million people were killed, including the British and the United States supplying the chemicals that would be used in chemical warfare against Saddam Hussein. I actually exposed that in an article and investigation I did in a cover story at the time. So we're supplying illegal weapons of mass destruction. They're being used first on Iranians, then later on Kurds. But at no time have we apologized for this unnecessary war that caused 1 million deaths in Iran. So now we take a country and we go in with Israel and we go into their computer system and we put the most sophisticated malware ever. It is a virus that went in that had no exit. So they had no idea it was in there. And it was to overstimulate their nuclear program the different machines necessary to produce low levels, which were under International Atomic Energy Control monitoring daily, 24/7, by cameras, lock boxes, and weekly inspections. They were not producing any weapons of mass destruction. They could not. And yet we let the world believe that, oh, we're only a week away or a year away or 2 years away from them having a bomb, then they're going to use it. None of that was true. That was all propaganda. But they would cause these facilitators to blow up. Yet you look at the machinery, it wouldn't show anything was wrong. So the Iranians didn't know what was going on. But that was exposed. And what we didn't know at the time was Israel and the Mossad had gone ahead to put another malware in that no one knew about that would knock out all electricity in Iran. When you knock out the entire electric grid of a country so that no electricity would exist at all, and they don't have backup generators, what would happen? Well, you could just imagine at what time of the year. If it's the middle of summertime, in the last 2 years, Iranian villages have had the hottest days ever recorded, over 160 degrees. You had people dying. What about in hospitals? And what about just, could you imagine not having a refrigeration, electricity, computer, phone? Why would you do that? Well, simple, because then you could not communicate with your defense forces where planes were coming on a long trip to use their new forms of nuclear weapons to knock out your facilities. And Israel's smart enough to know that they would have had to knock out everything in the country. And they would have done so. Now, mind you, Iran is a nation divided. They have a lot of young people who are highly educated and who are pro-Western. Then they have the old hardline theocrats. And the theocrats have a very specific, they're Shia, and they have a specific religious belief that guides them. Most are corrupt, and most of them control major industries. But they're not invading the United States. They're not a threat to us. If you're going to go into a country that's three times the size of Iraq, and you're going to take on one of the largest urban armies in the world, who've been planning on being attacked, so they know they're going to be attacked, it's just when, how are you going to do that? What would be the blowback? You would have a massive consequences. So for all those people, including Hillary Clinton and Israel and all their supporters who wanted Hillary to be elected, because had she been elected, there is absolutely a certainty that she would have given the green light to Israel to attack Iran. Here is the latest figures that we could rely upon. Keep in mind you have a huge population in Iran. The likely U.S., and we would have then had to have backed up Israel. You're looking at casualties, enormous casualties. U.S. likely casualties, about 15,000. Troops lightly injured, 270,000. You're also looking at troops more seriously wounded, about 90,000 U.S. troops. Direct cost of the war, about $5.1 trillion. Cost of caring for wounded troops for a lifetime, about $18 trillion dollars. Likely Iranian deaths, about 1 million immediately. Likely Iranian injuries, about 3 million immediately. And that's just the beginning of it. So think well of the consequences of an action before one is taken. Now, you would think with Trump going over to the CIA headquarters, he would have asked, what kind of agency is this really? Whose interests do they represent? And this is for all those people who don't believe in conspiracies, who believe that we just don't have conspiracies, that these are all, you know, 9/11 nut jobs. And I'd like to share with you some specifics. And my facts are based on historical documents. These are proven. And you can refer to Global Research if you need any backup. We have it from multiple sources. 1948, Italy. The CIA corrupts the democratic elections in Italy. 53, Iran. The CIA overthrows the democratic elected, which I just mentioned, Mossadegh, in a military coup. 1954, Guatemala. The CIA overthrows the democratic elected Jacob Arbenz in a military coup. Why? It's because Jacob was wanting to nationalize the Rockefeller-owned United Fruit Company. And one of the people invested in that was the CIA director, Alan Dulles. And Arbenz is replaced by a series of right-wing dictators whose policies killed over 100,000 Guatemalans over the decades, all under CIA tutelage. 1959 in Haiti, the U.S. military and the CIA installs Papa Doc Duvalier. He creates his own private police force, the Tonton Macoutes. They terrorize the population, and they're known for chopping people with machetes. They will kill over 100,000 innocent civilians in Haiti. And yet we're the ones who did business with the Haitian government the entire time, both the father and the son. And we actually facilitated the removal of the son with airplanes to France, where he looted the country, took all of its gold and wealth, and we participated in that. In 1961, the Dominican Republic, the CIA assassinates Rafael Trujillo. He was a murderous dictator. Washington was supporting since 1930, but his Rafael's business interest had grown so large that it represented almost 60% of the entire economy was his businesses. So we wanted one who would be more profitable for American businesses. In Ecuador, the CIA-backed military forces, the Democratic elected president, Jose Velasco, to resign, and we put it with a CIA replacement. 1963, the Dominican Republic, the CIA overthrows the Democratic elected Juan Bosch in a military coup, and the CIA represses the people by putting in right-wing juntas. Ecuador, in 63 also, the CIA-backed military coup overthrows President Arosemena, and he was an independent. He was not acceptable because he wanted land reform. 1964, in Brazil, a CIA-backed military coup overthrows the democratically elected government of Goulart, and the junta that replaces it will, in the next 20 years, become one of the most bloodthirsty in history. In fact, a general, Castelo Branco, will create Latin America's first death squads, or bands of secret police who hunt down anyone who's a union leader, an environmentalist, a freedom activist. Anyone who challenges the government will be tortured, interrogated, and murdered. And I went down there at the time, met with some leading people who took me out to see the actual way they work at night. We were putting ourselves at risk, but I wanted to see, who are these people? What are they doing? And I was reporting on that at the time. In Indonesia, 1965, the CIA overthrows the democratically elected Sukarno with a military coup, and the CIA has been trying to eliminate Sukarno since 1957. They used everything from attempted assassinations to sexual intrigue and blackmail, and nothing worked. So they installed General Suharto, who massacred up to 1 million civilians, all under CIA tutelage. And then you had the Dominican Republic again. A popular rebellion breaks out, and they promising to reinstall Juan Bosch. And so as the country's elected leader, the revolution is crushed by the U.S. Marines, and the CIA directs everything behind the scenes. In Greece, when the CIA's backing was there, the king removes George Papandreou as prime minister. Papandreou has failed to vigorously support U.S. interests in Greece. The Congo, Zaire, a CIA-backed military coup installs Mobutu Seko as dictator, and what they had is Mobutu was a genocidalist. He stole billions of dollars, all with the cooperation of American and Swiss banks. In Greece in 1967, the CIA-backed military coup overthrows the government 2 days before the elections, and the favorite to win was George Papandreou, the liberal candidate. And during the next 6 years, the reign of the colonels, backed by the CIA, will usher in widespread use of torture and murder against political opponents, all of which was backed by the CIA. In 70 in Cambodia, the CIA overthrows his prince of Cambodia and instead puts into place a man named Pol Pot, Lon Nol, N-O-L, and who immediately throws Cambodian troops into battle. This unpopular move strengthens once minor opposition parties like the Khmer Rouge. And you know what happened once the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot came into power. They massacred about 2.5 million of their own people. Bolivia, 1971, the CIA-backed military coup overthrows the leftist president, Juan Torres. And the next 2 years, the dictator Hugo Banzar will take over 2,000 political opponents, arrest them, torture them, execute them, also rape them. 1973 in Chile, the CIA overthrows and assassinates Salvador Allende, Latin America's first democratically elected socialist leader. And why? Because Allende wanted to nationalize ITT in Chile. So ITT offers the CIA $1 million for a coup. And that happened under Henry Kissinger, one of Hillary Clinton's heroes. In 1975 in Australia, the CIA helps topple the democratically elected left-wing-leaning government of Prime Minister Edward Whitlam. And then in Angola, the CIA did the same thing, along with, that's when Henry Kissinger launched a CIA-backed war in Angola. And contrary to Kissinger's assertions, Angola is a country of little strategic importance and not seriously threatened by communism. But the CIA backs the brutal leader of the Jonas Savimbi. And then in 79, El Salvador, Nicaragua at the same time, where Somoza, the CIA-backed dictator, falls, and the Sandinistas take power. Then we start a whole war with them, and that leads to the Contras. 80 in El Salvador, the Archbishop of San Salvador, Oscar Romero, pleads with President Carter. He said, Christian to Christian, to stop aiding the military government, slaughtering his people. Unfortunately, and this is, I really respect President Carter today for all the work he has done in challenging Israel and apartheid and his great work with Habitat for Humanity. But Carter was no better than anyone else when he was in president. Just look at what he did in El Salvador, because Carter refuses to stop the carnage. And shortly thereafter, right-wing leader Roberto has Romero shot through the heart while saying mass. So you can blame Jimmy Carter for that. The country soon dissolves into civil war, with the peasants in the hills fighting against the military government. The CIA and the U.S. armed forces supply the government with overwhelming military intelligence superiority, and the CIA-trained death squads roam the countryside. And where did they learn how to torture and kill? School of the Americas. 63,000 Salvadorians were killed because of this. Jimmy Carter could have prevented this. 1986 in Haiti, a raising popular revolt in Haiti, means a baby Doc Duvalier will remain president for life only if he has a short one. And the U.S., which hates instability in a puppet country, flies the despotic Dauvilliers to the south of France. In 89 in Panama, mind you, here's the irony, General Manuel Noriega had been the CIA's drug man and covering them for 26 years, but they went after him because he was no longer playing ball, put him in prison where he stays to this day. Haiti in 90, the CIA was behind the military coup there. In the Gulf War in 91, the U.S. liberates Kuwait from Iraq, but Iraq dictator Saddam Hussein is another creature of the CIA creation. He didn't want to play ball. We get rid of him. 93, in Haiti again, where Bill and Hillary Clinton joined at the hip, decides that they want to put a Haitian military dictator, Raoul Cedras, in power, and or they want to remove him, and so it goes. And Aristide is returned to power only after being forced to accept an agenda favorable to the country's ruling class where it can be exploited. I could mention more, but the next time you hear, and I no longer believe we should be calling him President Trump. I believe we should call him the Don, because he reminds me quite simply of Don Corleone or Don Genovese or Don Colombo or Don Lucky Luciano. He reminds me of a person with the personality and temperament of an organized crime boss. Earlier, I had coined a phrase called Trumpocracy, where it's a form of fascism, totalitarianism, duopoly, all under the guise that he's doing right for the people. He's never done anything right for the people in his life. I don't expect it now. So when you go into CIA headquarters, just understand how many regimes have been affected, how many people have been affected around the world. And the list is there where we have intervened. Now, if our media, if the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN are so concerned about interventions in other people's elections, then what about China in 1949 and the early 60s, Albania in 49 to 53, East Germany in 1950s, Iran in 53, Guatemala in 54, Costa Rica in 50, Syria in 56 and 57, Egypt in 57, Indonesia in 57, 58, British Guiana in 53 into 64, Iraq in 63, North Vietnam, we intervened 1945 to 73, Cambodia 55 to 70, Laos 58, 59 and 60, Ecuador 60 and 63, the Congo 60, France 65, Brazil 62 to 64, Dominican Republic 63, Cuba 59 to the present, Bolivia 64, Indonesia 65, Guyana 66, Chile 64 to 73, Greece 67, Costa Rica 70 to 71, Bolivia 71, Australia 73 to 75, Angola 75 in the 80s, Zaire 1975, Portugal 1974 to 76, Jamaica 76 to 80, Chad 81 to 82, Grenada 83, South Yemen 82 and 84, Suriname 82 and 84, Fiji 87, Libya 80s, Nicaragua 80 to 81, Panama 89, Bulgaria 90, Albania 91, Iraq 91, Afghanistan the 80s, Somalia 1993, Yugoslavia 99 to 2000, Ecuador 2000, Afghanistan 2001, Venezuela 2002, Iraq 2003, Haiti 2004, Somalia 2007 to the present, Honduras 2009, Libya 2011, Syria 2012, and Ukraine 2014. That's 57 countries, 57 different times that the United States, the CIA, the State Department, the Defense Department, the Pentagon, intentionally and with malice aforethought, intervened in democratic processes because we didn't like what could be the outcome. And yet we have the temerity, the clowns, the barking dogs at CNN have the temerity to suggest that somehow Russia intervened and we should all be up in arms. Well, why don't you do a little history lesson, friends? That's real scholarship, and it shows you utter complete hypocrisy. Let's now go to my guest who is standing by and say hello to John Whitehead. He is on our side. John is one of America's foremost constitutional attorneys. He's written, debated, and practiced widely in the area of constitutional law and human rights for the persecuted and the oppressed. He is the founder of the Rutherford Institute, which is nonprofit civil liberties and human rights organization down in Charlottesville, Virginia. Nice to have you with us today, John.
Hey, Gary, thanks for having me on. Anyway, I like what you're saying. You're hitting the mark, man. I think you're hopefully some people will wake up out there and we can get some kind of really strong movement out there against what we're seeing happening. It's going to get worse, don't you think so?
It can only get worse because the people in power have never in their life, never once have they had the strength of character to acknowledge they made their fortunes from their own interests and against the public's interests. So how are we supposed to take every one of these department heads who've made hundreds of millions to billions of dollars for themselves and their companies by exploiting the public, by throwing people out of their houses, by foreclosing on their homes, and then expect them to put those people back in the houses, to build houses for those people, to care for their health, to care for their environment? That's never going to happen. But I'm going to ask you some specific questions I'm very concerned about. I'm very concerned about asset forfeiture that no one is talking about. It is not on any list. And yet every day we have people who are being stopped on the road.
Yep.
Their assets are taken from them. It could be their car. There are even little machines now where they can take your credit cards, debit cards, and withdraw all the money out of your bank account, put it into the bank account of that local police
department.
Oh,
they're taking people's homes. They're taking people. There's some people out in California who they're taking their building because supposedly a drug enforcement agent claims that someone in the building gave them sold the agent $37 worth of medical marijuana. They've seized the building. Now they have to go into court and fight to get that back. They've not been charged with a crime, by the way. That's happening on the street. If you have, and I'm warning people, go to our website at Rutherford.org because I talk about asset forfeiture and what we're seeing happening. But if you're driving along in your car, be sure you don't have any cash at whatsoever. What they're doing, and this is really sneaky, they'll pull you over for supposedly following too close. That's an actual case. They bring out their so-called drug-sniffing dogs. The dog goes in the car and alerts. They sweep the car. If they find any kind of cash or anything, they keep it. They may keep your car. And here's the key is universities show, and this is amazing, those dogs are only 16% accurate. That blows people's minds, but that's the actual statistics, so they're fake. In other words, they're using pretext to get your property. They're taking people's homes. It's called civil asset forfeiture. There's criminal asset forfeiture where you've committed a crime. You don't have to commit a crime in America now for them to take your car, your property, and to go get that after you're released from custody or whatever, you have to file a lawsuit, and most people give up because they can't afford the lawyers. So that's the state of America, and they're using it for. In our local area recently, they threw a pizza party, the police did, for some local people using asset forfeiture funds.
Well, it's a big deal because 61,998 cash seizures just on highways, just on the highways.
In 2012, it was over $4 billion. It's around $5 billion a year they're taking. From American citizens.
And they're keeping.
It's thievery.
It's thievery, and no one is charged with a crime. No one's given a ticket. They're just saying, we suspect that your car. They confiscated thousands of cars because if you're driving a rare car and a cop likes it, suddenly they take your car. You're left at the side of the road. They keep your car.
Now you have those drug sniffing dogs that walk around the car, and they're not accurate. They're a phony. I mean, if you have, I'm warning people, do not have any kind of cash in your car, very much at all, in an envelope, laying anywhere. If it doesn't fit in your billfold, folks, watch out. They'll take
it. But they can also go into your billfold, take out all your debit and credit cards, stick them in this little machine they have, which will withdraw all the money out of your bank account.
Yeah, they're doing it electronically now, yeah.
That's fascism, John.
It's going to be by way of phone, by the way, your cell phone. They'll be taking it off your cell phone. It's coming up with supposedly a new technology where they can just sweep your phone now. We've reached an age, I wrote a commentary yesterday, and I hope people would read it. It's gotten out on quite a few websites. Has the American dream become the American nightmare? We're facing so many things like this. I don't, it's 80,000 SWAT team raids a year. Over 80% for mere warrant service where the cops used to knock on your door to see if you were the person. Now they go in through the doors. We handle those cases, by the way, at the Rutherford Institute. Just nutty stuff. I mean, But it's all on the pretext of you may have an ounce of marijuana on your home. And they get the SWAT teams get federal grants for SWAT team raids for marijuana.
Well, but the SWAT teams can also be able to keep some of that money they're confiscating.
Oh, yeah,
assets
they do. They
confiscate.
They're confiscating houses.
So you have SWAT teams breaking in doors, killing your dogs, killing people, by the way, to serve if you are late on a student loan. They actually do that in California.
Exactly. That's in my book, Battlefield America. I detail these in my books and stuff, hoping to wake people up. And here's the key. You can change these things in your local community, but people, you better wise up. And you know, it's most people, they don't care about it until they get the knock on the door. But I'm saying you better get ready. When you see something like this happen in your community, read about it in your local newspaper, get together with your friends and get down to that city council and get some oversight on this stuff. You can stop this. It's going to take citizen action.
It will. I don't think we're going to get that going at this moment.
I'll tell you one reason why, because most people don't know their rights. You know, the Fifth Amendment says you cannot take someone's property without due process of law. That means charged with a crime, actual crime, appear before a judge, get a warrant before you search one's cars. They're bypassing everything.
But this is true of Obama.
I'm talking to today. I'm talking to law students today that can't tell me what's in the Constitution. That's not taught in schools anymore. So we're an ignorant population that doesn't get it. And if we don't grow up, get an education precedes action. And most people, Gary, the average person watches 151 hours of television a month. If I'm telling people, give me one-third of those hours for freedom and get active in your communities, yes.
John, what I'd like to do is I'd like to do with you a webinar, you and Danny Sheehan. You know Danny, don't you?
Yeah, I know who he is, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the great constitutional attorneys also. I'd like to get the two of you on a webinar on legal rights, like 2 hours, one evening. We broadcast all over the world. Are you up for that?
Sure.
I'm going to put that on the schedule. I have one last question for you. I believe that the media, the people in the media, the talking heads in the media, the journalists in the New York Times and all these other people, they don't realize how corrupt we are. And here's a basic question. If someone is
realize that, but I'm not sure they're reporting it, but go ahead.
if a person is constantly a serial offender, if they're breaking the law constantly, then to me, they should never be trusted. They should lose their charter to do business, and the people who've broken the law should be held accountable. They are not. Let me give you specific examples, and I want you to answer a question I have following this. Specifics. These are actual, and these were obtained by lawyers that I hired to get this information. I have not a single place on Wall Street could I find was honest. Bank of America. Let me give you specifics. $91 billion in fines, $16.6 billion for the sale of shoddy residential mortgage-backed securities, $11.2 billion for tens, which was also in faulty mortgage sales, $9.5 billion for defrauding Fannie and Freddie Mac, $8.5 billion for toxic mortgage-backed securities, $2.9 billion for closure abuse, $2.4 billion for false statements about Merrill Lynch's health, $1.7 billion for toxic mortgages, $1.3 billion for fraud over defective mortgages, and $950 million for toxic second liens. Now, you have Deutsche Bank, $1.9 billion for defrauding Freddie and Fannie, and also other lawsuits, thousands of lawsuits, by the way, over 3,000 additional lawsuits. Credit Suisse, $5 billion in settlement mortgage cases, $2.6 billion for helping American account holders hide their wealth, and then also $10 billion in other lawsuits. Bank of Scotland, at hundreds of millions in LIBOR scandals where they fixed the LIBOR. The HSBC, hundreds of millions in fraud, including one for $1.2 billion for violating the trading with the Enemy Act and Bank Secrecy Act. Goldman Sachs, $5 billion for faulty mortgages, sham mortgages, $1.2 billion for housing regulatory lawsuit, $550 million for inside betting against mortgage bonds, JPMorgan Chase, $13 billion for sale of troubled mortgages, $1 billion for botched financial transactions of trades, $1.7 billion for the Madoff victims, $13 billion for sale of mortgage-backed securities, $4.5 billion for falling mortgages, Citigroup, $7 billion for toxic mortgages, $2 billion for Enron investors, $2.6 billion for World.com, and Wells Fargo, $8.5 billion for foreclosures. Now, you add all these up, you're dealing, and I'm only giving a tiny sample because of time restraints, you're dealing with hundreds of billions of dollars in fines, thousands of legal actions per firm, and yet it's from these people that the Don selects his Treasury Secretary, Clinton selects to go do lectures and puts these people on their financial advisory boards. This is where Larry Summers, this is where Timothy Geithner, this is where Paulson, these are where all the people come from. These are a den of pathological sociopaths and thieves, and they're the ones, the American media, the business channels, and none of the hosts will ever condemn or attack or do an expose on. Your thoughts?
Well, the oligarchy controls the mainstream media. That's, you know, that's obvious. I mean, you said Trump, I mean, Wall Street runs the presidency. That's obvious. When I saw people lining up, Goldman Sachs lining up with Trump, I said, whoa, here we go again. So it isn't the common folk anymore. It's just, and listen, that 2014 Princeton University studies, two decades of policies and laws passed in Washington, D.C., the professors came to the conclusion that we live in an oligarchy run by money, a money elite. And it control, the CIA, the NSA, Google, all those large corporations work with them. So it's that memo that was leaked during all the emails with Hillary Clinton that said there was this seven-floor group. I don't know if you saw that. It was an FBI memo. Seven floors underground at the State Department. They run the government. The deep state, it's called. So, folks, this idea about democracy and all that, again, it doesn't work. I've sued in and out of Washington, D.C. for 40 years. It's the most corrupt institution I've ever come up against. So it's run by money. They want your money. They want to tax you. They want to put you in jail if they pull you over. Folks, if we don't wake up, it's just like that movie, John Carpenter's movie, They Live. Put on the Hoffman lenses and you'll see that the people running the show aren't who they say they are.
John Whitehead, thank you for being with us today. Battlefield America, the war on the American people, and the website is Rutherford.org. We look forward to our two-hour webinar on constitutional rights coming up in the next 2 to 3 weeks with Danny Sheehan and John Whitehead. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And you don't want to miss tomorrow's show. Have a nice day.